Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Also brilliant, no doubt, is our very own Dr. Carl. Dr. Carl, good morning to you. How are you?
Peachy King, thank you, Dr. Howard.
Good. So, in fact, Anton, one of our listeners, was at Brighton early this morning, sending you a message, or sending us a message, to pass on to you, and I didn't even really understand it. He says, Dr. Carl, acids are sour and sticky, while bases are bitter and slippery. Why? He wants to know.
Say that again. Acids.
He says acids are sour and sticky, while bases.
Sticky. Hang on. Sticky. What do you mean by sticky?
I don't know. It's Anton's question. Because I don't even understand
honey,
it. Yes.
Because, well, an acid is sour when you put it on your tongue.
Okay.
But sticky. I put lemon juice is sticky. Lemon juice is acid.
Ah, so then it's not always. Okay. So we know.
Sticky. And what was the other thing?
And then bases are bitter and slippery. Why? Lemon juices versus sodium carbonate, for example. I remember my sticky fingers when doing chem labs and all the holes in my lab coat.
I'm thinking that there's, I don't know enough chemistry, so I'll go with a definite don't know. And if a chemist could ring in, they will have the definite answer. I'm not a real chemist, so there.
Okay. I hear that. Right. Let's talk about the two bits of the moon, the size of Australia, but hundreds of kilometers high. What's the story?
Well, it's long been a mystery how the moon formed. And the current best accepted theory is that around 20 to 100 million years after the Earth formed, there was a collision.
Mm-hmm.
A collision between Earth, say 10,000 kilometers across, and something smaller the size of Mars, and it slammed into the Earth. Now, if the Earth was 10,000 kilometers across, and it was moving at 10 kilometers a second, that's 1,000 seconds, that's 20 minutes. So it was quite a long time for that collision to happen, 20 minutes. But within a few hours, the two bodies had sort of collided and then thrown stuff off. And then it formed in a big sort of a spiral, a big circle around the Earth and a long tail, according to the simulations. And there was a big clump and a little clump. The little clump way out became the moon, ended up orbiting around the Earth.
Wow.
And then the big clump dived into the Earth and was sort of spread in the mantle. So a bit of background on the Earth. So the Earth has
amazing.
A crust, which is about 60 kilometers thick, and that's solid. And then inside that, you've got about 1,500 kilometers heading down towards the center of molten, gloopy rock. And inside that, another 1,500 kilometers worth of iron. So there's a ball of solid iron, a ball of liquid iron, and then molten gloopy rock. And the molten gloopy rock's about halfway between the surface and the center. And the bits of the moon, there's two bits that were found, we think.
Right.
They're each about the size of Australia. They're sitting on top of the ball of iron. They're at the bottom of the molten gloopy rock. And they're roughly the size of Australia and a couple of hundred kilometers high. One under West Africa, which is fairly easy to locate. The other one they say is under the Pacific Ocean, which is not much use because by itself, the Pacific Ocean is bigger than all of the land on Earth put together and pretty well makes up half the surface of the Earth. So it doesn't give you much of a hint, but they're getting closer to working it out.
It'll be fascinating. I mean, I wonder where, you know, what information could be gleaned from that. I mean, let's assume the one found in West Africa underneath. It would be so interesting to think about what could be learned from that.
Well, we'll learn a lot, but whether it will make people wealthier in the short term or in the medium term, probably not. But on the other hand, you had Einstein scribbling away in 1905 and 1915 with his special and general theories of relativity. And in less than a century after that, we now use that to navigate our way to a pizza bar on a Saturday night when we've had a few drinks, and why we always want to go for saturated fats instead of healthy vegetables when you're a little bit inebriated, I don't know.
So you never know when you do some good where it could land up. Walking backwards for joint pain. I've seen a lot of that on, I don't know, on Instagram, and people are saying,
really?
You walk backwards on this treadmill. I don't know. For me, I struggle walking forward. Only once I've mastered that will I start looking at backwards. Does walking backwards help you in any way?
Well, the fancy name for it, the answer is yes-ish. And the fancy name is either retro walking, or if you want to go even fancier, retro ambulation.
Oh, I like that, retro ambulation.
Yeah, and physiotherapists and doctors have been recommending it for decades. And it has three kind of advantages. The first one is that it engages different muscle groups in your thighs, so your thighs get stronger. Mm-hmm. Secondly, it engages different muscle groups in your buttocks, so your buttocks get stronger. And thirdly, it relieves pressure on the inner part of your knee, where many older adults develop arthritis. One in four people aged 45 up have been diagnosed with arthritis. And so by walking backwards, you don't cause pain on that inner part of your knee. That's a good case of where evolution did a pretty crappy job. Hip joint I like, knee joint sucks. And so retro walking, the way you do it is you start off on a treadmill, and that's an easy way to do it. Or if you've got a friend who can be your navigator, walk backwards at about one third of your normal
walking. I'm sorry,
but
if you can trust a friend for that, then he's not a friend.
There are friends. So you walk backwards at one third your normal speed for about 2 minutes, and you swap over forward working, backward walking for 30 minutes. And it's quite exhausting. And once you get to being able to do it for 10 straight minutes of walking backwards in one go, you will find greater strength in your buttocks and thighs. And when you stand up, you won't have to go, ugh, and make a grunting
That's
noise.
So interesting. In fact, if I recall, and some of our listeners could help me out here, I am sure that there's a Comrades Marathon runner who either does or used to run the whole Comrades Marathon backwards, which seems a bit pointless to me, but, you know, because then you might as well have to start it on that. Anyway, but so I never really understood it. But if you could let me know, in 34519 or 0618951019. So you're saying it does have some benefit in strengthening your joints, your thighs. What about your brain? I would imagine that to some extent the concentrating, balance, all of that could be quite positive or not.
Yes. So, for example, with your eyes shut, you are able to put your finger onto your nose because of a sense that we have called proprioception, which is knowing where your body parts or your joints are. And if you walk backwards, then that also improves your ability to sense where your body is and makes you less likely to have a fall and break something.
Very, very interesting. That's where we leave it with Dr. Carl. Absolutely love these chats to him. It is 8:30. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.